to call my doctor. My doctor just happened to be best friends with Brandon Braga.
Okay.
Just happened to tell my doctor what had just happened. And he called me back. I was on the 405 or the 101 heading back home. And he called me back in 5 minutes and said, turn around. They're going to see you again. And I turned my car around and I drove back and I went in and was like, I'm so sorry. Like, it's just, you know, and I got the job, thankfully, but it was all because of my doctor. And so it was amazing. I had this relationship, I think this instant camaraderie with the producers, because I had that sort of connection to Brannon. I really got along with these guys tremendously. And they had this room, this producer's room that you could go in and you would, you know, they smoke cigars in there. And at the end of work, you know, they had some adult beverages in there, and that's where they would brainstorm.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And I would go in every once in a while and be like, hey guys, this is gonna be out for a while. And I loved it. It was such a great time in my life because they were so understanding, and it was such a perfect job for me because, you know, they block shoot 24, and that was my first experience with block shooting. And for anyone that doesn't know what block shooting means, you shoot multiple episodes at the same time. We do it on Another Life.
Okay.
So what you're doing is you're not having to move from location to location every other day. You're staying in one location for as much as you have for two episodes instead of one episode. So you're doing all CTU for two episodes, this, you know, however many days it takes up. You're right. Doing this location for all two episodes, you know, this couple. So the great thing about that was I would have 3 weeks off. And, you know, there were times where I was like, do I have a job still? This is so weird. It felt so weird. But it's a perfect situation for actors that, you know, do other things in their lives as well. But for me, it was great because I, like I said, I still didn't feel 100% physically and mentally, I was very, very foggy. So for me to work for 2 weeks and then have 3 weeks off was the perfect situation for my recovery.
I mean, you were in every episode and you were in recovery and able to recover. Man, that sounds like the timing sounded like it was amazing for that, for sure.
It was.
You don't miss an episode.
No. And it's so strange too, because I also, in the middle of that, had my tonsils taken out. So if anyone as an adult has had their tonsils taken out, it was the worst, till this day, the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life. For 14 days, I was on liquid, like Oxycontin, liquid. Because like, you don't realize how much saliva slides down the back of your throat when you're sleeping. It's like, it was the worst pain I've ever experienced in my life. And I was actually able to do that in the middle of 24 too, because I had so much time off.
Right, right.
It was really great.
I thought your character on 24, Dana Walsh and Jenny Scott or whoever, it was played really, really well. Did you always know from the start that you were sort of going to be become a villain, you know, towards the middle or end of 24? And because it was even at the end when Jack Bauer shot your character, that was very surprising to the viewers as well. So how did your character evolve from the start to the finish?
I want to add to that. Do you feel that you were a villain? I guess is the kind of the, was your character truly a villain in your eyes or?
Oh my God. You know, I don't know. It's been so long.
Yeah.
I think I knew from the beginning that there was that she, I don't know if I knew she was the mole, but I knew that she was not herself. Because I wanted to do certain things with her voice and like mannerisms and things. Like I wanted Dana Walsh and Jenny Scott to be the same person, but to sort of feel different. Like I wanted Dana to be so controlled with the hair constantly
outside
of her, you know, like, and Jenny to be a bit more, you know, crazy. I mean, of course she's awful, you know? But I also think that, you know, I think that she was just trying to get out of a life that she didn't want to be in. And, you know, sometimes people are willing to do anything it takes to escape something. And I think that we can all identify with that. I just think that her morality compass was a little off.
Just a little, maybe a little.
Just a little.
But yeah. I mean, from that's why I asked about being a villain. The motivation of the character was this life was terrible and I want to start fresh. And here's somebody who's offering me a chance to start fresh. Absolutely. So am I really a bad guy or am I just somebody who wants a better life?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was my first experience playing a true villain.
Right.
Yeah. And I fell in love with it. I love the idea of taking someone who is morally bankrupt or slightly corrupt or, you know, insane and trying to make them relatable to the audience, because you have to, at a certain point, want them to potentially win, or you have to understand at least why they're doing what they're doing. You know, Dana, on the other hand, though, was so unforgivable that I think that she's the only character that Jack ever shot point blank and like didn't even flinch.
Yes, there was no hesitation.
None.
And you actually look surprised. I've watched that scene a couple times in the last couple days. And you look genuinely shocked, as if maybe you didn't know that he was going to do it, which I thought was very convincing.
Well, I think that she was so convinced that she was so good.
Right, right.
At manipulation. Yeah. That she manipulated herself almost. So... yeah. Although I do remember I had squibs on me for that.
Right. Okay.
And I had never been squibbed before. On Battlestar, I'd never been squibbed before. And I remember them saying you need earplugs. And I remember thinking to myself, I can't have them because I have so much dialogue with him. And I had this experience on Battlestar that, you know, we would fire guns all the time on Battlestar and I would only wear one. One earplug, and until of course my character had two guns and then I got a little screwed, but, because you have to be able to hear yourself still because you're having conversations, and when you have earplugs and you feel like you're underwater, so it changes the way you speak. And if they're not willing to cut that, so you can put earplugs in for an explosion, you have to deal with that the entire time. And I didn't want to do that for this last scene as Jenny Dana. And so I didn't put the earplugs in. And I remember that first squib going off and thinking to myself, fuck, there's one more. It was so loud that I thought my eardrum had burst. And it was, I mean, obviously I'm being overdramatic, I'm an actor, but it was so loud. And that fall at the end, this is all going through my head.
Right, right.
As that second shot goes off, because all I remember thinking to myself is, girl, you better make this fall so fucking convincible that you don't have to do this again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't want another take on this. Yeah.
I was in so much pain. My ear was already ringing and I was like, fuck, there's one more of these things.
Right. Right.
And the second one went off and I fell backwards through that plastic as hard as I could.
To try to muffle it?
No, I just wanted the fall.
Yeah.
I wanted them to not have to shoot it again because my ears hurt so bad that I was like, one and done. We cannot do this again. And so I fell so hard through that plastic trying to sell I gave it every ounce.
I'm really dead. I'm really dead, honest.
Yeah.
I'm super dead, honest. I'm super dead.
I was like, oh my God. So now I wear earplugs if there's squibs or explosions.
Yeah.
When it came to the storyline of your character, was it a nice collaboration between you and the producers? Like, I mean, I've always wondered, are you part of the decision making on what happens, how your character evolves, or when your character gets killed off of the show, or is that mostly the writer's decisions, or is it a bit of both?
That's the writer's decisions for sure. I mean, some of that stuff. I think also at the time, I was 28 and I hadn't really found my voice yet as a woman to stand up for myself and to talk, to fight for the things that I wanted or to actually even believe that my opinion was valid.
Right.
You know, I'd been acting since I was 14, but in some ways I still very much felt like an outsider and a child and like, that at any moment I was going to get fired and they were going to figure me out. So I always minded my P's and Q's. Mm-hmm. I was always a good girl because I didn't want to get fired. And I was, you know, I was conditioned to think by, you know, a manager, for better or for worse, who's still my manager, to not be difficult. Don't be difficult. Difficult people in this industry don't work unless they're so famous you get past that difficulty. So I think, and I know this, having known these producers, if I'd gone in now with the confidence I have now, yes, as a performer, as an actor, they would have been 100% open to my opinions.
Sure. Yeah.
I didn't really give any back then because I felt so lucky to have a job that I don't think I would have ever imparted anything that I felt would have been misconstrued as overstepping. That being said, they, you know, the hair thing was definitely mine, and like the little changes in her voice were mine. I mean, you know, that is the thing with television, is that character is yours because we don't have time to stop. And really, I always say in television, you don't really get directed.
Right.
You know, they don't have the time to really direct you. They do in other stuff, obviously, but in not many episodes a season, you're moving really fast. So
you're really part of, as far as 24 is concerned, you're part of a legacy of, again, I hesitate on villains because of the motivation, but those memorable characters that are just like, there's Nina Myers, there's you, there's Mandy, there's all these characters that could switch. Yeah, I mean, what I liked about your performance as Dana Jenny was the switch. There was a switch you could turn off between Dana and Jenny. And I remember there's a scene where you're calling 911 on Jack. And you go into a burst of tears, like, oh my gosh, he's coming to get me. And as soon as you hang up the phone, you're like, I'm back. It's like, it was such a cool, and again, there's such a legacy of different villains throughout the series. You're one of the more memorable ones of kind of the whole series because of the way you did that and because of the way you died. I mean, you really, you know, you faced him head on and were like, come on, I can turn you. I know I can turn you. Just tell me what you want, which is, you know, when you can do that to Jack Bauer in his face, it's pretty amazing. This leads to my next question. What do you most enjoy about being Amunet Black? So you said that was your first, Dana Jenny was your first villain, but then you became Amunet Black. What do you enjoy most about being Amunet Black?
You know, Amunet came in a time where, the producers really let me do whatever I wanted to do, which has never happened for me before.
It's clear.
that of, you know, Amunet was not supposed to be on paper what she is. She was meant to be American and, you know, just a villain. And I don't know if they anticipated what I was going to bring to the table, but I remember sitting down with one of the producers and telling him what I wanted to do. And I had just done an audition for Hellboy? Something that I did a British accent for.
Okay, yeah.
And they ended up hiring Mila Jovovich for the role, but I had this audition and I wanted to play this character. So I sent it to them and I said, I want to do this. The response back was, what? And I was like, no, I want to do this.
This is who I want to be.
And they said, go for it. Yeah, do whatever you want. And I said, and we have to understand, I don't think she is British. I don't think she is. I think she's from Clearwater, Florida. I think that this is a woman that was turned into a villain,
right,
who had a chip on her shoulder that went, who do I want to be?
Yes.
I want to be Mary Poppins on crack. Like, I want to be, you know, like, I want to be crazy.
You know who that reminds me of?
And so, you know, I think,
I'm sorry, Natasha Leggero, the comedian. Natasha Leggero, she talks on a podcast about how she's from Rockford, Illinois. And she says, I didn't want to be that girl from Rockford, Illinois. So I created this Natasha Leggero character that's very high end, you know, very, you know, but she's not who she grew up as. She just decided this is who I want. Yeah. Who I want to be.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I watched the last episode that you were in, and I'm pretty sure the accent disappeared for like that long. I wasn't totally sure.
Yeah.
Did it?
Yeah, no, it does. It goes in and out constantly.
Yeah.
Because she's not British.
Yeah.
She's crazy. She's insane.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I remember showing up my first day and doing the rehearsal of the first scene. And it was a scene with Caitlin under a bridge. And the director, I did the accent for the rehearsal, and the director goes, "What are you doing?" I went, "Oh no, this, I spoke to the producer. I spoke to one of the producers. I'm doing this."
And she said I could.
She goes, I don't think you should. No. And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I went back to my trailer and I sat there and I was so scared.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh my," she basically just told me I was awful. And I was like, or at least that's how I interpreted it.
Right, right.
What do I do? Like, what do I do in this moment? And I was like, no, like, go back and say, this is what I'm doing. I was told I can do it. I'm doing this. And I just did it. I was like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I don't care if you hate me. Don't have me back. But like, I'm doing this. I want to do this. I want to have fun. And and she's crazy. I pitched a story to them that, you know, because Amunet talks about her third favorite henchman all the time.
Right. Yes.
And I'm like, well, who's her second favorite henchman? Because she's never mentioned who her second favorite is. So I want an entire episode with Amunet holding a baby, but she never mentions the baby.
Right.
She's just holding a baby. You know, nursing the, or not nursing, but burping the baby, feeding the baby, rocking the baby, everything you do as a baby, the whole episode. And she never talks about the baby till the very end when the second henchman comes back to get the baby because she needed him. She had to babysit. And she's like, fine, I'll babysit the brat. Just don't do it to me. Fine, just give it to me. What do I have to do? Keep it alive.
It's such an amazing character. And I got the impression you were loving it, but you were making it up. And that was your over the top kind of fun, kind of no holds barred. This is who I am. Because the characters always look like they're surprised by everything you say, which is amazing.
I think they are.
If there's any show you're going to do that on, it's going to be The Flash.
It's so funny. My last scenes with Candace, she literally, I did a scene with her. We did like one take and she was like, girl, like, that was insane. And I was like, I know, I'm sorry. Because it must be really hard to stay in character when you're standing across from a person who has no rules. They just do whatever they want.
Exactly. So. Exactly. which kind of, you know, from what you described from before saying, I'm going to behave, I'm just going to don't cause waves, to creating and, you know, infusing that character with exactly the way you wanted to do it. It's kind of part of your journey, right?
Yeah, I think so. As a person.
Sure.
100%. You know, I think that I've sort of started to find my voice as I've gotten older. And trust in the fact that, you know, I've now been doing this for, I think, like 25 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I get fired now, it just wasn't meant to be. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think that there's a confidence in that. I think it's as I've gotten older as a woman, I start to be more confident in who I am as a person. And it's not so much even about being confident as an actor, because I'm still incredibly insecure about that. I think it's more so just confident in who I am and know that, you know, that I bring something to the table.
Yeah.
There's some experience that I get to bring with me that matters, you know.
My wife and I we have those conversations all the time about if we were the same people we were 10, 15 years ago, that's not progress, right?
Yep.
And we put up with less, which is a good thing as we get older.
I think the pandemic too has taught you know, people, you know, more about themselves too, you know, what's important. So like how has COVID, you know, affected you personally and in your profession as an actor, the pandemic, like dealing with it, and has it changed Has it affected work?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, personally, I have been with my fiance now for 3 years, 3 years, I think, or at least known him for 3 years. And I don't think that I could have been stuck in a house with another human being
Right.
for that long. And that is something that was so, I was so not, I'm not even going to say pleasantly surprised because I knew that we had a really strong relationship, but I was pleasantly surprised, like when you are with a person 100% of the day, all the time, on top of each other. We work together, we live together, we do everything together. And we still like each other. and more so, I think that was such a beautiful thing to find out because not only have we written a script together this year and remodeled a house together and planned a wedding together, but we made it through COVID. It's like, we're good. We're good. We can make it through anything.
I look at my wife all the time and I say, there's nobody I'd rather have gone through this, continue to go through this with, which is, and as you said, to be able to say that a year into it is pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a hand, I applaud, I have a friend who's a musician. I have a friend who's a musician in Sacramento, and I have one of my wife's favorite clothing stores. And so my friend who's in Sacramento is in his 60s and literally couldn't play guitar last year. Doctor told him, you got to take a break. And so he did, getting ready to tour. COVID hits. He does a show every Saturday night. Just he invites people in, and he's done, this is, I think this weekend would be 54, or this season's 55. So he's done every Saturday night. He's done a show in his 60s.
Wow.
And then there's a clothing store in town where the woman is doing live fashion shows 3 times a week, and she's in her 60s, and you get the hey, is the camera on? Because her granddaughter's running the camera, but you get all those like blooper type reels at the beginning, and I applaud those two who have said, we're just going to take the camera that we've got in our hands and we're going to create content instead of going, well, I guess we can't do anything because our businesses are shutting down. I applaud anybody that says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to create content. We're going to get out there. So that's why, I mean, I love watching your YouTube channel in the same way, because it's like, what can I do in this moment?
The pandemic has been really hard for so many people, and it has been devastating for so many businesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a gentleman that comes once it started once a week on our street. He owned a crepe restaurant that was going under, and he knew someone on our street, went to his church. So we started setting up on our street and making crepes on Sunday mornings.
Amazing.
And now it's like full-blown carnival now. Like it's, he comes, there's the band, there a band comes now on Sundays. Like it's crazy. It's like you'd think that, and everyone on our street is amazing. Like the relationships between everyone on our street have flourished during this time. The other day we thought we lost our dog. And I kid you not, there were within 30 seconds, there were no short of 10 of our neighbors out running the streets with us looking for Happy.
Wow.
Driving, one of them was driving Robin around. One of the girls at the end of the street was riding her bike with her dog because he's friends with Happy, thinking that would help Happy come out. Like
Sure, yeah.
everyone was running the streets. Of course, we find him in the goddamn garage, but
But he was
he
safe.
was safe, thank
Yeah,
God.
yeah.
But that is the community that has sort of been one of the things that has been a silver lining with COVID is we know all of our neighbors now, and we didn't before, not this
Sure.
well, and it's I am hopeful that things get back to norm, a new normal. very soon. You know, it's, you know, this has been so hard, and so many kids need to get back to work and or back to school, and people need to get back to work, and restaurants need to open, and businesses need to open, and we need to find a way to do that safely and, you know, get things going, because this has been really devastating.
Yeah, like in Ontario here, we're back in lockdown. We have been for about 2 weeks already, and we have another 6 or 5 weeks left of lockdown. So even here in Canada, in Ontario, it's been tough too on a lot of businesses.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And like people's mental health and kids, they're not in school right now. And
yeah. And that's been so hard on kids, you know, like some children have flourished at home.
Yeah.
You know, and then other children have fallen behind at home, and mm-hmm. and children you wouldn't think have fallen behind at home, because what they need to motivate them is that community at school, you know. I mean, so it's just been a very sad thing to see for everyone, you know. I'm hoping that as many people that want to get vaccinated, and you know, it can sort of help open things up again. You know, we pushed our wedding, and, you know, we may have to push again, because we don't know if the Canadians can come here. They can come here. We just don't know if they can go back. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's hard, you know, we've got, you know, a number of Robin's family are just now getting their vaccines. So we're really excited about that. You know, we got ours. So happy about that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Who knew I would get excited about a vaccine, but I was it felt like a movie set, to be honest, when I went and got it, because it was like your typical sectioned off long rows of white rooms, and unfortunately couldn't take pictures of anything. I was like, this is very cinematic, and I've seen at least a dozen movies that all have this same walk in here, do this. But yes, I was very excited to get a vaccine.
Yeah, I would love to see a future where some sort of, you know, no one wants to call them vaccine passports, but at the same time, you know, you might be able to open up travel between countries a little bit more freely. If you can show that you've been vaccinated, you're allowed to go home, and maybe you don't have to quarantine, but you just show a negative COVID test, and, sure, you know, or something like that. But, you know, I think the CDC is getting ready to tell people that have been vaccinated that they don't necessarily have to wear masks around people anymore. And so it, you know, it does provide you a little bit more freedom, from my perspective. Sure. I know not everyone feels that way. People keep asking me, like, what's the last year of my life been like with, you know, the new show and Mandalorian and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Has my life changed? And I was like, no, because I wear a mask everywhere. No one,
right? Yeah, nobody sees it. It's
me. I get to walk around, and you know, there's an aspect of this that I absolutely adore. It sort of has, you know, I always wanted to maintain anonymity in this industry, and
sure,
you know, continue to do what I love to do, which is be creative and be an artist without losing that privacy. So it's sort of given me the best of both worlds.
You know, what's amazing these days is I think with the pandemic, binge watching has gotten a lot more popular, and 24 is on Disney Plus now. So Disney Plus has really opened up the 24 floodgates. We have a lot of new fans of 24 and old fans rewatching it. So it's amazing that it still works 20 years later. And, you know, Ryan and I could say as super fans, we hope that they revive the show one day in the near future, because Jack's story was left open, so we would like to see another 24, hopefully. Some people would even joke on a group page that they should do it at 24, where Jack can kill COVID within 24 hours.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see a future of 24 where Dana Jenny is still alive, because I mean, you know
what would be really funny is if we found out that she was a twin.
Yes.
And she actually, you know, she really was Dana Walsh and Jenny Scott.
There were two. There were two.
There were two, yeah.
There were two. You know, Kiefer's amazing. I loved working with, I was surrounded by such fun guys on that episode. You know, Freddie Prinze was so much fun to work with.
Yeah.
I loved working with Clayne Crawford. I loved working with Clayne. He was so great. And then Kiefer was great. And Stephen Root was great.
I
had so many amazing men around me that were so encouraging and supportive, especially with everything I was going through with my health. But you know, it was really cool. Kiefer's amazing. I really enjoyed him. I saw him about a year ago. Not even. Well, yeah, I guess it is a year now.
Everything's a year.
It was a couple of months ago. No, it was about a year ago at a convention. And it was just like, you know, instant, like, hey, how are you going? Like, blah, 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 blah. And then we took a shot of whiskey and I went and caught my flight. So,
did he apologize for killing you? Was that, is it still weighing on him? He was over it by that point.
Yeah. No, he's so great. He's so great. He's such a good guy. He's such a good actor. You know, he's such a good actor.
Yeah, absolutely. We went to see him play his music about 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. Yeah. Just hung out after, was in no rush. It was just it was a great time. It was really, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, no, he's a really cool dude.
And you share the same initials. I mean,
we do.
You do.
I never knew that.
That's true.
I had filed some stuff on my computer and I put some of your interviews in a file and I put it KS. And then when I opened up some other files that said KS, I was like, oh, I didn't follow that. Yeah.
See? I wonder what the name is. If it's Arthur, then we have the exact same initials.
Wow. Yeah.
Adam. Kiefer Adam. I don't know what it is.
I think he's got like 6 middle names.
Oh, it's of course. That doesn't shock me.
The Donald gave him, I think, 5 or 6 middle names in there to, you know, Rufus Williams. Oh, yes. There's like at least 5 in there.
Oh my God. That's hysterical. Yeah. That's when the moment when you and your significant other cannot agree.
It's true. It's true. My firstborn was supposed to be Adam Clayton until my ex-wife found out about the guy from U2 and then shot it right down.
It is funny when you start like talking about names and you know what some people think is cool and what other people think is cool and you know it's quite funny actually.
It's a fun game when you're trying to name animals or kids or anything. It's you find out what you know what people are made of. Well, it's another life has been able to wrap. Is season 2wrapped?
Yeah, so we were two weeks into filming the second season when we got shut down.
Okay.
And because I had a work permit, I stayed in Canada with Robin because he couldn't come down to the United States with me.
Right.
And so we were up in Canada virtually the entire time. We were able to cross into the United States once because of my ongoing treatment with my health. I had to come back to Los Angeles. Yep. And all we had to prove was that he was that he was a necessity to my travel.
Got it.
And my travel was a necessity. Mm-hmm. And they gave him a week to, you know, to come down to the United States with me and turn around and go back. So we did come down to the States, I think in June or July. Mm-hmm. And I think we actually ended up staying like 3 weeks. I think they gave him more time, and then we went straight back because there was this weird thing that kept happening. Like, okay, we're going back in 2 weeks. So you need to come back because you have to quarantine for 2 weeks. So, so we got back and then all of a sudden it was, another month. And then all of a sudden it's like, I think we started filming in October.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, again. And we finished right before Christmas. Like, I think like 4 days before Christmas. 5 days. No, that's not true. We finished the 18th.
Okay. Have they set a release date on that?
No. But if I was a betting person, I would say probably, you know, fall.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Based on where we're at with the mixes, I'd say that we're, you know, probably after September, before November.
looking forward to season 2. Absolutely. Yeah.
Season 2 is really cool. Like I've seen almost all of the episodes now and there is something very different about this season. It's more grounded, which I love. I love that in my sci-fi. I love crazy too, but I do love the groundedness of this season. It's cool. Very cool.
Sci-fi. I want to jump off from that point. You like sci-fi a little bit. Just a little, from what I understand.
I do.
Understatement,
Just a
probably.
little, yeah.
Understatement. What kind of sci-fi did you grow up with?
So my dad's favorite movie growing up was Forbidden Planet.
Oh, wow.
So
Yeah.
yeah, so we watched that, and it was any sci-fi and action movie that was made in the 80s
Okay,
was like
right. Okay.
huge for me because I was born in 1980, and so like by the time I really started watching movies, like sci-fi movies, I think I was probably about 7, so like 87. And then
That's
I think the
a
first
great year. Oh my gosh, yeah.
right here. And I think one of the first movies he ever that I ever really remember watching with my dad was like, I think Jaws and Predator and Die Hard and Alien. And I was like
Wow.
7 years old.
What a great diet for, yeah, what a great introduction.
I know.
I
So
mean,
he really raised me on these movies, Forbidden Planet, and then also Westerns like High Noon, which is still my favorite movie of all time.
right.
And so he really just gave me my love of cinema. I mean, I say this all the time that I always wanted to be Bruce Willis, because there were not a lot of, from my perspective, I know other people obviously have different life stories than I do, but from my perspective, there weren't that many strong women in movies, like
Absolutely.
not in action movies.
Right.
And so when my dad showed me Alien for the first time, and when he, showed me Star Wars and I saw Leia, those were pivotal moments for me because I, only saw these male action heroes around. And so when I started seeing these women, Linda Hamilton and Lucy Lawless, and really started seeing women portrayed like kick-ass women, but still vulnerable,
Of
still
course.
feminine in many, many ways,
Absolutely.
which is amazing. I think so many times we get in the habit of thinking that a strong woman can't be vulnerable and can't have moments of weakness and can't have these female qualities. But I think that that's what makes women so strong is that we have both sides of us.
And what's interesting is what you just described Starbuck. You know, the kick-ass woman who's feminine and still can take care of business. And you know, when you look at some of the even some of the films you were just discussing, moving into like Underworld and you know those kind of Starbuck just made sense when Galactica came out. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, we shot that pilot in 2002, I think. And it was a really interesting time because women were not, at that point, women were not written, at least in my mind, women were not written with stereotypical male qualities.
Right.
They were written like, stereotypical women, very, very, one-dimensional, and that was what you saw. I mean, granted, we had the Lucy Lawlesses, we had the Sarah Michelle Gellars, we had strong women on television for sure, but we didn't have up to. I think what Starbuck did was we never talked about the fact that she was a woman.
Right.
She just was this well-rounded character that did things that up to that point men did without punishment and forgiveness and like all of these things. She was unapologetically everything. She just was who she was, and we didn't justify that by saying anything about her sexuality at all. She just was this person or her, gender.
I can't remember there being even a discussion, even leading up to the show, that Starbuck was not the guy Starbuck from the original series, that it was going to be a woman. I don't remember there being any. I think it was just like, this is the way it is. This is Starbuck, which I thought was so, what a great way of saying it doesn't matter. Let's just introduce the character as she is, which well, I think was really
that,
cool.
That what Ron Moore did, and I think I remember this correctly, that, mm-hmm. you know, he was looking at adapting this show. And I believe that based on the military up at that point, that he realized that we've got to make some of these characters women. Because women are actively serving in the military.
Absolutely.
And he just picked. Like, it wasn't like premeditated, like, ooh, this will be fun. Yeah. It was just, okay, Starbuck and Boomer, let's go. You know? Yeah, it was pretty funny. People were not happy about it at all.
Yeah. The people aren't going to be happy about, you know, any kind of change. You know, it seems like Ron Moore was able to just tune out those voices and say, look, this is the way it is. This is my version of it. I don't care if you like it. We're just going to do it. And I think when you take that approach.
Yeah.
It's ballsy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say it's sci-fi though. I think you know, up at that time you were allowed to do things in science fiction that you couldn't do in reality-based television. Because you're not talking about a reality-based thing. You're talking about something that doesn't exist. And therefore, it was a lot easier to create strong women in sci-fi because it allowed audiences that deniability. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. Of course the girl beats up the guy because it's sci-fi. It's not real.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it gave them this thing where it became more palatable for people that wouldn't necessarily have been comfortable watching a show had it been based in reality. Had the show been, you know, not Battlestar Galactica, but about the US military, and it was a very similar show, people would have had a problem with it. A bigger problem than it.
I think TV's had the ability to do that because I don't remember seeing a black president on screen before 24. And I don't remember seeing a woman president before Galactica. I do not remember even that image where you start to visualize and go, well, yeah, that makes sense. Why did it ever not make sense? You know?
Right.
I think that is kind of the role that the arts can play in just helping us to visualize what the possibilities are in many ways, even in a fictional, you know, surroundings. I think that opened up the conversation to say, well, why don't we have a black president? So
I say 24 started the split screens on Zoom and all that.
You know, I think Zoom owes them some money, to be honest.
Yeah,
it was so iconic with the you know, the sound mixing of 24.
Yeah.
Was
yeah
pretty cool. Katie, what advice,
sorry, Justin.
What advice would you give to someone just entering the TV business as an actress who's coming out of school from acting and just entering the business? What advice would you give them?
Oh, God.
Great question.
You know, this is not a nice business. It's not, and I mean, you know, there are aspects of this that are absolutely amazing, and I am so blessed to have the life and the career that I have, but it's not the norm, you know. I think that you need to understand that there's so much luck that goes into this, not to take anything away from what people accomplish in this industry, because, you know, there is opportunity and preparedness that meet and, you know, create luck, of course. But I would say that if you're trying to become an actor to fulfill a part of you that you're not happy with, that you should do some work on yourself internally before that, because this industry is not going to fulfill you as a person unless you're fulfilled already. Because, you know, if being famous and being an actor is the end all be all, and you're not going to be happy with your life unless it works out, chances are you're going to be very upset. So I would just tell someone to make sure that you have things in your life that make you fulfilled and make you happy outside of this, and you make this your job. And you look at it that way, because there is so much of it that's outside of your control. And then I would say, just create your own content. There's so many platforms to create your own content right now that if your desire is to be creative, you can do that right now. And fulfill pieces of yourself that need that creativity and that release. You could do that right now with your iPhone, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Wow. In normal times, when people would stop you to say hi on the street, is there a particular character that they would reference, that one that would stand out over the others, or is it equal across the board? You've played so many people and so many iconic characters and so many great shows. Is there, are there some that stand out more than others?
I would say probably 8 out of 10 times it's Vic from Longmire.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that show was universally loved by so many different types of people and so many different age groups that I think that, and I look like her walking down the street. I think that's the other thing.
And you established yourself right at the beginning of that series as to this is who she is. I thought right from the very first episode, it was very clear who you were dealing with. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. No, I said for the longest time that I can't wear my hair in a ponytail and my Ray-Ban sunglasses anymore.
There's certain looks that you have to avoid. Even with the mask.
Yeah,
probably,
exactly. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. Wow.
No, thankfully the mask makes it a little easier.
A little more. It goes back to the cowboy, you know, the Westerns, really the ability to wear a mask and all that. Justin, do you have any other questions at all, or?
No, I think all my questions have been answered. I think you've been amazing, and we appreciated you joining us today. That's amazing, and we just can't thank you enough.
Oh, absolutely, it's my pleasure. I'm glad that it worked out.
Absolutely. Brian, anything you want to mention?
No, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, because it's again there's so much to talk about. You've played so many different people but again, who you are on your YouTube channel is as exciting as everything you've played. So we're excited to actually let people know and push more people towards the YouTube channel as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
You gave us a really good piece of advice about creating content and
It's so true. You know, like my fiance is a writer and it's by trade. That's what he does. And so, you know, we sold 2 scripts during quarantine, which was great. But at the same time, you know, he's writing scripts and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you don't need $6 million to make these movies anymore.
Right.
You literally need a camera and, you know, like a very minuscule lighting budget and a sound budget, and you can go make movies yourself. You could literally make a movie with an iPhone that gets you into a film festival. You never know.
Sure.
So I think we got so sort of bombarded with like these big budget movies, and then, you know, P&A, which is, you know, publicity and advertising, costs $20 million just to put a movie into theaters. You've got to do $20 million for publicity and advertising. So a little movie, like a $1 million movie, never has a chance to get into theaters because it's $20 million just for the P&A for that movie. It's the same $20 million it is for the Avengers. So $1 million movies didn't stand a chance. Now, there's so many opportunities to just put those movies out. And they don't need to be 1 million. They could be $200,000 movies. They could be $50,000 movies. They could be, like I said, with your iPhone, put them out yourself. There's an audience for these movies online and just start creating.
I mean, I've got my collection here of some of them. Oculus and Don't Knock Twice, and I was watching the special features. They talk about how this isn't a big budget film, but the story is there. You know, and as long as the story is strong, I mean, again, I watched them again, and I was like, man, I really like the stories of these films.
Yeah, you know, I think that so many times we have over the last, you know, how many years, foregone good script for explosions and, you know, violence and, you know, sex appeal and all of these, everything else that you could possibly imagine.
Right.
Big name, you know, throw a big name in a movie with a shitty script and it'll sell. Don't worry about it. But like, I think that we're having sort of this like come back to basics where if it's not on the page, it's not going to show up on camera. So we're getting back to create good content, create good scripts. Everything starts with the story. And if the story's not there, it's audiences are going to see right through you now.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were talking to Howard Gordon last week and 24 co-creator Bob Cochran.
Yeah.
And when the question about whether they'll do a 24 revival, the same answer was, you know, they have to make sure the idea and the story is right. Yeah. Or else, you know, they don't want to do it just to do it. They don't want to do it unless, you know, the idea is the right idea. So,
yeah.
Which I for
24, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It matters. It absolutely matters. You can't just point a camera at you know, something expensive and big and flashy and think that audiences are going to watch it because they're not anymore. There's too much content.
Yeah.
You have to go with the heart and the story and stay with that and create really great characters, which is happening even more now.
Awesome. What a great way to wrap this up. Thank you so much, Katie. Oh, this has been an honor. And again, you let us geek out.
Typical barrister.